guys, welcome to another episode of The Gallery. I'm Claudia Osorio, your host. Today we have Kristen Massa joining us. She is probably one of the most badass women I know in Houston. She's a director and producer right here from Houston, Texas. She's launching a new production company called Femme Days. And it's focused on content by female-fronted bands, artists, and it aims to support more diversity in film. So welcome to the gallery, Kristen.
Thank you so much. I'm blushing.
No, but you recently worked on a music video.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Which, is it the one that I sent you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That is a music video for my buddy named Wazir. We went to school together and were sort of acquaintances for a few years. And I approached him about a year ago and said, I'm tired of waiting around for content to come to us. I mean, there's never going to be a perfect time. Let's just make something. And it kind of started with that. And I had no idea. I just had no idea the amount of work that would go into the final product, but we did it and we made it. And it was at that time the most difficult project I had ever spearheaded. And it was just a great experience. It was shot in Houston. I think we incorporated a lot of skills that I had never used before in a video. So
like what kind of skills?
So, I mean, there's like a lot of elements that go into filmmaking that if you haven't really honed your skills in that, it's could either crash and burn, be like really great. Cause you can rise above and learn something new, you know? So we did a lot of, well, let me backtrack and say a lot of projects that I'm doing right now are super DIY. They're really just, let's figure out how we can make it. And you want to make the best content that you can at the time, but you also have limited funds. You have limitations, right? But we wanted to dream big. So we did a lot of green screen. We had like a location change. We had a bunch of extras. And in the moment, it was like terrifying and scary, but also really exhilarating on the shoot days. But then afterwards, it's so cool to have made something like that. So,
but you're one of the few women in Houston that have that really do-it-yourself attitude and get it done, which is a little difficult, especially for women here in this creative culture in this city specifically. So tell me more about how you go about finding projects and figuring out like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. Thank you for saying that, because I think I have a whole new approach now to how I approach creativity. Luckily there have been some really good examples lately in Houston, that I really admire, like Damn Girl, which is what we were talking about when we first met. Mm-hmm. I was telling you how much I admired what they're doing and how really they're just creating. They're saying, okay, the world that we're existing in isn't ideal. And the creative space is
right.
That,
so let's change that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so I think I've been lucky enough to observe like really awesome women lately who are just like, I'm just going to do it myself and make it. Like Lauren with El Lago is another woman who I really admire. I mean, they're spearheading so many artistic ventures with like their zines, and they're doing videos with Wake the Zine. And anyway, and I also have a mentor named Jenny Waldo, who I told you about, who's like, she has no idea what a hero she is to me, because she's one of those women that juggles everything. She has a family. She's written a novel. Like one day she came up to me and said, yeah, I wrote a novel. Can you read it and give me notes? And I was like, I mean, is this, you just didn't tell anyone and you just did this out of your creative, I don't know. She's just amazing. She's a director in Houston, by the way. So anyway.
And you've collaborated with her before.
Yeah. Right? I've been an assistant director for her before. I really admire her. I know she's the kind of woman who approaches her creativity the way that I am trying to now, which is like the circumstances are never going to be perfect. No one's going to give you permission to make things. And so just find people who are good and who are honest and genuine, and then just make something. And more often than not, the result is going to be a great experience. It's going to be hard. Nothing ever is easy. But if you just like put a little bit of grit towards it and put your mind to it, it's, I don't know, it's really exciting.
And I can imagine it's very challenging too, because when you think of film production and the technical aspects of going into making a music video or a short movie or anything, you think of males, you think of men who are predominantly in this industry. Mm-hmm. So where did you find that confidence to kind of not muscle your way in, but figure out like this, I can do this and I can do it better than a man?
It took me a really long time. I went to film school straight out of high school, and I still at that time didn't really know if it was for me. And even in film school, I never found my confidence. I just never felt like I fit in. But at the same time, I had no idea if I wanted to do anything else. So I just kind of got through that. And then the first time I was on set, it was like this huge Nissan commercial that was in Houston, like in 2013 or something. I felt like super alienated, and it was like a shell shock. Because being on set, it's a male dominated field. It's hyper masculine. The energy on set it's just really different than what you expect. And that moment was like so scary because I didn't feel like I had the personality or temperament to actually do what I had went to school for, it was like devastating. And I had this like quarter life crisis thinking like, what have I done? I've wasted all of my time thinking I would pursue a career that I just don't have the personality to do. And luckily I discovered all of these amazing directors on the internet, like Ava DuVernay, who directed Selma and who's like a goddess to me, and Jill Soloway, who directs for Transparent, that amazing TV show on Amazon, mm-hmm. That brought to light a lot of trans issues to people who didn't even know they existed. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I had this epiphany about 2 or 3 years ago where I realized instead of approaching creativity and approaching a male-dominated field in a way that a man would with, you know, I decided to approach my femaleness as an asset to the world, you know?
How so? How did you utilize that?
Okay, so being a director on set, it's like kind of like being a parent, and it is. You want to foster the creativity. Everyone's coming together and doing this impossible thing. You have like actors, you have set dressing, you have camera, and you're all trying to juggle this at the same time. And you're also trying to inspire the people that you brought together to make something great. And the way that I approach being a director on set is just to be incredibly supportive, but also know that it's, you know, the buck stops with me. I am allowed to say, I think we're good. I think we've got this. Or I'm allowed to say, no, this isn't what we came here to do. Let's work it a little bit more. Let's get the shot that we really want. And it's such an empowering feeling to be a director and be in a room where everyone's sort of like looking towards you and saying like, okay, is this it? Because there aren't many times in my life where that's how it is. It's a really empowering feeling. And then when you're done, and everyone looks at you and said, I just had the best time making something. It's like, okay, my job is done. So anyway, I think I just had an epiphany a few years ago when I realized instead of existing in someone else's world, like build my own world and then just do it my way, you know?
Did you always want to work in film? When did you realize that this is what you wanted to do?
I had always done something a little bit creative in high school, whether it be like with music or theater. And I was heavily involved in theater in high school simply because in the suburbs, I grew up in the suburbs.
Yeah, there, me too.
Yeah. Yeah. I was listening to Mandy's episode and was like, I'm fist pumping to everything that you're saying.
Yeah,
because
that's real life.
Yeah, it's real life.
And for creative people growing up in the suburbs, you think it'd be a little stifling, but man, you find ways to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And so, and in a lot of ways, theater is like one of the only venues you can find in high school.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily the end path that you want to do in life, but it leads to a lot of things. So because of that, I had friends who were involved in a feature film in high school, and they just invited me. And at that moment, a lot of things clicked because filmmaking is so many different disciplines, all combined. It's very creative. There's writing, there's acting, their set dressing. There's a huge technical aspect to actually executing the images and with like the camera department and then the lighting. It's a thing that you have to hone for years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just starting now, and I am, I think, finally happy with some of the content that I'm making. Obviously, I want to get way better. But it's just a thing that you can continue to learn and grow with for years and decades, which is really exciting because I don't think there will ever be a dull moment doing this. So I started with theater. I worked on that feature film with some friends randomly because they were involved in theater. And I realized, oh, this is – I actually see possibilities in this. It's not just acting. It's everything. Anything you want to be, you could be in the film world. There's so many different departments. And I was going to film school. I was trying to act for about a year when I was like 18 or 19, simply because that's just an option. And I was aimless and I was figuring out what I wanted to do, meaning acting on film.
Right.
And I was acting in this like Converse spot, which is like a 30 second or a minute promo. And it was a pretty uncomfortable experience. And even though I didn't have the language that feminism gives us now about how the male gaze works and like how uncomfortable it can be sometimes when you're put in a position when you're acting that just doesn't like really feel right.
Right.
At that moment, it was, I think, a point where I realized I don't feel really comfortable doing this. Why don't I? Why don't I make content? Why don't I be on the other side of this and control the narrative and make things and just take control? At that time, I didn't realize that. But now looking back, I realized like, oh, that was when I realized like acting just isn't for me. I want to like control things more.
How were you uncomfortable? Did somebody on set make you uncomfortable, or you just realized that that wasn't for you?
So it was one of those situations where there's a bunch of men, right? And they're like, they just want to make something. And it's not like, it could be way worse, right? It's not like there was like a sex scene or anything.
Sure, sure.
But there was a moment where the director was like, okay, so now we're going to get two girls, you and you, and we're going to have you guys kiss. And we're going to have it in slow motion. And then, right. And then we're going to throw paint on you. Yeah.
So they started to overly sexualize this.
Yeah. And the thing is, it could have been an opportunity to have a great queer moment, right?
Right.
It could have been awesome. It could have been like super cute, loving, normal. Like here's a cute lesbian couple, right? Like in their Converse, getting paint thrown on them. But no, it literally existed only to titillate and just be two girls kissing, right? And then the thing that made it even worse was that the moment we started shooting that, everyone on set like dropped what they were doing and kind of like stood by the camera to watch, you know? As if they were like watching a movie, like with their popcorn and their 3D glasses.
Damn shame, man.
I know. Oh. And I, at the time, like I said, I didn't have the language for why I was uncomfortable, but very quickly thankfully, like because of the internet, I discovered feminism and like Rookie Mag was like really important to me in that and other outlets. And I finally realized like, oh, the reason why this didn't feel right is because we existed just to be seen and to turn people on and not to actually have a real moment of like loving, you know, queerness. So I think that was a breaking point. I stopped acting after that. And it was also a good example of how to not direct people. Like when you're being an actor is like so vulnerable. It's so vulnerable. And I wasn't up to it. I didn't have the temperament to do it. And I really respect women who go out there and do it because auditioning is like a soul crushing process. And I try to remember that when I'm putting my actors in a position where they maybe feel uncomfortable or, you know, you just have to respect them. Everyone on set needs to realize like this project wouldn't exist without them. I know we're all doing our thing and we're all watching you, but I don't know. It was a good learning experience. So.
But that's admirable that you took that bad experience, turned it into something else, and we're like, you know what? I want to start changing how this works. Because it does suck for women.
It does.
For women putting in uncomfortable situations like that.
And now that I think about that, okay, so after the kissing paint incident, then after that, And I wanted to shoot, or they did shoot, slow motion of like someone hosing me down, hosing the paint down. And at that point, I was like, I'm just going to be insubordinate and do this like not cute at all. And like, just get the paint off, you know? And so I was like, I had a face and I was like, as if I was just like showering and I wasn't cute. And I think one guy had the gall to say, can you just be like, can you be a little cuter or a little sexier? Like maybe open your mouth a little or something.
I'm like, shut the fuck up.
I know. And so luckily now I can look back and laugh, but I mean, can you imagine? And it, that wasn't even the most vulnerable it could have been. It wasn't a sex scene. I mean, there's so many stories of actresses in Hollywood who are famous who said they just have horrible experiences and they regret. It's not their fault. It's not that they couldn't. It's not that they didn't. Not speaking up could have stopped it. You're putting yourself in the hands of someone else, and you're supposed to be safe around them. So, anyway, good learning experience. And I think that looking back, that's a maybe when I was like about 18 or 19 is when I realized, okay, I want to be on the other side of the camera and really control this. So,
yeah, there was recently. I'm trying to remember exactly how the story went, but Maria Schneider came out recently with that incident in Last Tango in Paris.
Oh my gosh, how horrifying reading that.
It's I hate to be like, it's just so disappointing because you kind of expect it.
Yeah.
But how horrific to go through something like that. You know, you're coming in for a day of work and you're put through something and you're humiliated. And that was what they were going for, right?
And then the two people, like the lead actor and the director,
Marlon Brando. Yeah, they were.
I couldn't believe that. I mean, he's like Hollywood royalty, right?
Right.
He's like someone that a lot of people look up to. And when I read that, I was just, I felt so sad for her. Because imagine also her telling that story to people throughout the years and no one believing you.
Yeah.
You know?
Or worse, you know, being like, yeah,
it's
that
part
happens.
Of the job. Occupational
just,
hazard.
Just being passive about it and just being like, yeah, you, well, I mean, you wanted to be an actress, right? That's what happens. So, you know, deal with it, honey.
This is why, yeah. This is why representation and women and people of color behind the camera is just so important.
Yeah.
It's so important. Also, like the ACLU, I think, is suing Hollywood and studios now because of the rampant discrimination against women and people of color. I think I was looking at, I was trying to do my homework so I would like know and have like statistics for you for this, but I think it's only 7% of the top 250 grossing films in the US were directed by women. And then of course for people of color, it's less.
Yeah.
And so, and then it's pretty similar in TV. It's about 17%, which I was thinking it was better in TV because a lot of the people that I respect and love work in TV, but it's still pretty bad. So
that's disappointing.
Yeah. But that's why I have, I don't know. I just feel so emboldened now because if more women are the ones hiring people, if they're in leadership positions, they will hire more women. And then it's just a different vibe on set when there is different perspectives, you know, in representation. So it's very important.
So I want to backtrack a little bit. You talked earlier about a project that you were involved in here in Houston, the Nissan commercial.
Oh, yeah.
So you do a lot of reality TV show crew work.
Yeah, for sure.
And you do a lot of it here in Houston, which I wasn't aware of, that there are a lot of projects that come here through Houston. So how do you get involved in those projects?
Houston's a really interesting city. It has a very close-knit film community. There aren't, unfortunately, too many feature films or clearly no TV shows being shot here, but there's a lot of reality being shot here. There's a lot of commercials being shot here. A few years ago when I was really starting James Harden and who's the football guy that like everyone was obsessed with?
Is it J.J. Watt?
Yeah, J.J. Watt. When he
Who cares about him?
Well, he was he was like the reason why film people were working in Houston a few years ago because every single commercial was being shot with him, which is a good thing. So it's really interesting being on set on a huge production like that. It's like, it's going to another world. Like everyone uses it's like you have to learn a new language and There's like all these rules that you have to abide by to not look like an idiot and like screw everything up. So it's like terrifying and really exciting, but it's also really different. It's so different from doing like short films or even music videos or feature films. So it's,
sure. Yeah. And you're on a tighter deadline, I imagine. And
yeah, it's just, and again, I've worked on dozens of projects like that. And I had never once worked with like a female director or a female cinematographer.
Shit. Really?
Yeah. The first time I did was with Jenny Waldo, who I never said this when I was talking about her earlier. She's a film instructor at my film school that I went to at Houston Community College, and just so well respected. Like whenever she walks out of her room, everyone just sort of gushes about her and mm-hmm. says, "Isn't she so cool? She's so awesome. She's really great." And then it took like another year, and then I worked on a reality show in Galveston, and there was a really great female producer director there who I just really respect when they're like commanding the room, the ones making the decisions.
Was this the awesome. HGTV show Property
yeah.
Brothers?
It was I think they have like five different shows. It was Brother versus Brother. They like flip houses and compete. So yeah, that's always really fun. I mean, it's good to work on big projects like that, to learn the nitty gritty of how a production actually works when so much is at stake, when like so much money is being spent.
Right.
And then I really like to observe different aspects of like leadership, and you know, there's just so much that has to get done that seems impossible. It's organized chaos basically. But then at the end of the day, you know, some production companies do a better job than others. And so I just really like to observe what wasn't working on this show versus this show, and then try to like take what I've learned onto my smaller projects, you know.
So. What is that dynamic like? Because it's a pretty big show. That's one of the most popular ones on HGTV. Did you have random people coming up and
wanting? Yeah, lots of like moms. So yeah. many moms just excited.
Yeah.
So happy and excited to just get a glimpse of them. And they know people love them. So
they
like.
Were they nice to you?
So nice.
Okay, good.
So nice. Good. I mean,
glad to hear it.
Yeah.
And I like them. They're cute.
And I know it's like a cliche that Canadian people are really nice, but that. I like never got that or believed it. And then a large chunk of the production was Canadian because mm-hmm. their headquarters are based in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it was the nicest crew I've ever been on. Really supportive. I mean, it's like, oh, this is how it should be.
Yeah.
It's like a family. You're shooting together for 12 to 14 hours. If you're the production assistant, you're there for 14 hours. And you're around each other for so much time. You have to like who you work with, or it's going to be miserable. And then it also has to, there's so much planning that has to go into it, or it'll just be, it'll crash and burn. So yeah, it was a great experience. They like learned everyone's names. I mean, it's not uncommon for talent to just completely ignore people,
but,
they're great. I mean, they would invite people out to like movie nights or like potlucks. Aww. Yeah, it was great.
That's nice. How did you get involved with that? Did somebody reach out to you, or did you apply for it? What is that process like?
Luckily, so it kind of all works on like, just find the first job. Just find the first film job. It starts as like being a production assistant. You kind of have to work your way up in certain departments. And if you find that first job and you do a good job, it will lead to the next job. So I had met a friend named Ryan Nguyen. He's like a colorist and a DIT in Houston, which basically just means taking all the footage and making sure it's a really technical job, but mm-hmm. you make sure that you can send it off to the editing people, who are usually like somewhere else. And if you screw it up, you like literally ruin the whole show because you could like delete all the footage or transfer it wrong.
Sure.
But he's a really supportive person. He's an ally for sure to like feminists and women in the industry. And I had told him I wanted to do a more technical position. I was feeling disappointed in where I was at that time. That was maybe only like 6 months ago. And so he told me, you know, I was invited to work on the show and I can't fulfill the position the entire time. So would you like, I'll train you and I'll let you fill in when I can't, which was really awesome of him to do. And it was a great learning experience.
So I want to talk a little bit more about your production company that you're going to be launching soon, Femme Days. Where did this come out of? Where did this desire to start your own production? I mean, we've talked a lot about what you've been going through.
Yeah.
But it's a huge step to launch something like this.
I think I just saw... luckily, like I said, I had so many good examples of women just doing it, just making their own space, not saying, I have to do X, Y, and Z and the way it's always been done to make this thing. No, women are just doing it in the way that is safe for them and exciting for them. When you're first starting out in film and you're directing specifically, it's not like there's a lot of opportunities coming to you to direct. You're new. No one's going to say, hey, you're straight out of film school. Will you direct this commercial for me? And so you have to find ways to practice and hone your craft, which takes years. So I started doing like little promotions and commercials for businesses, which is a great way to practice. Because, you're your own small business. You're not just someone who shoots a commercial. You're an entrepreneur, basically. Mm-hmm. You're
negotiating owning these projects. Yeah.
You're negotiating contracts. You're
doing
creative.
And it's your name on it too. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's a really great way to practice like being an adult and being your own business. Yeah.
Being a girl boss.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. By the way, girl boss, I love that term. It excites me. But some people have problems with like saying like, you're mentioning that I'm a woman. Like, why don't you just call me a boss? What do you think about that? I think it's cool.
I'm very happy to be a woman.
Yeah, me too.
And I love using my position of a woman as a woman of color to make a difference. And if you want to call me a boss, you can call me a boss. If you want to call me a girl boss, call me a girl boss. I don't care. Well, either way, I'm a boss.
Yeah. And then like, yeah, exactly. I love being a woman. I love using my femaleness. Being a female, you see things through different lens. Yeah. And then I'm sure being a woman of color, also, I have privilege. I don't see things the way women of color do. And so that's why it's also really important to uplift those voices. And anyway.
So tell me a little bit more about what you're looking to focus on with this new production company.
I for a few years had been practicing doing that, but I felt like a huge lack of interest in the content that I was making. And, in one way, I was like on the right track, right? You make stuff and you get paid to make stuff, and that's what you do. And that's how you succeed in the business. But to me, I was thinking, I don't feel passionate about anything that I'm making. And I would rather maybe take a little longer to make stuff, but find people that are inspiring and then find people that are really interesting and bring them all together and make something super exciting. Which is what I did with Wazir's video. I mean, it's not like we had a huge budget for that, but I approached him. He had an idea for a video and we did it. And whenever your intentions, I think whenever you approach art with intentions like that, where you're not really thinking about, is this going to help me quote unquote make it? Or is this going to help me meet the right people? Or is this going to help me make more money? If you're just making art that way in a really genuine way, it only leads to joy, which I think is really important. So anyway, I just decided to make a production company that's specifically focused on things that are really important to my life. I'm trying to be more aware of activism and make a difference in ways that I can. And having more representation behind the camera is a way that I could do that.
Sure.
And it'll take a while. It'll take a long time, but I know it's possible. I want to find women and bring them together because magic happens when you bring smart, awesome women together.
So you seem to be doing that, right? Finding women as a support system. And you're using your position to inspire others. And
I mean, I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because we don't have opportunities like that as women. And I have a lot of friends who go out to New York or go out to LA, and it's like, man, it was tough here. I can't even imagine what it's like out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like with this new production company, with Femme Days launching, you're going to give a lot of people kind of like a stepping stone.
Yeah.
To be in the spotlight a little bit. And that's great.
I hope so. I mean, I have goals. It's not like I really want it to be a certain thing, and it might take a while to get there, but I know it's going to work. It just seems right. Like, you know, when you get an idea or you meet certain people or you're in a situation and you realize, oh, this is right. This is perfect. It's like when I had that idea, it just seemed perfect. And it's not necessarily like on paper, like it's what you're supposed to do if you want to have a trajectory that's working in the film world. But to me, it's right. Like, I don't care if I'm making money doing this. I'll figure out how to make money another way with a day job or working on reality shows, you know? But if I get to like choose people that are amazing and bring them together and make something exciting, like that's totally worth it.
So with your production company, Femme Days, you also edit, produce your own content. What are you currently doing to provide the necessary resources to help others out? Because you seem to have figured it out. You've figured it out, but others, they're in a position where they don't even know where to start. Or if they film something themselves, they're like, how can I get this done? How can I edit it? What's cinematography? What's lighting?
I think I had so much fear when I started in film school, and it really didn't happen until after I had graduated that I realized I can do it. Even if I don't know how to light this idea that I have or to edit this weird effect that I have for a shot, you can figure it out. And I think one of the things that I want to do is instill this idea that you can actually do it. People are very capable. The internet exists, and any idea that you have, it might take a little bit of research, but you can do it. And I know, and in film school, I saw this too. Sometimes there's people who just go into a place and they're really confident, and there's no reason for them to be confident. They just think they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And then there's people that don't feel like they have a seat at the table and feel like, I don't have the brain to do this. I can't edit this. I'm not good enough. And I was that person. Mm-hmm. And now that it's only taken me like a few years to find that confidence, I really want to be that person in other people to say, like, who says that you can't do this weird thing in After Effects or Final Cut? You can, because there's a 13-year-old on YouTube that has a tutorial on how to do it, you know?
Yeah. Those have gotten me out of some rough spots, like those tutorials, yeah.
And the idea of giving people, specifically women, the tools to make their own content is like revolutionary to me. It's really powerful because it means that you have total control over anything that you make, and you just feel so great after you've approached a project not knowing what you're doing. You're silently freaking out like, what did I do, what did I get myself into? And then if you finish it at the end of it, maybe a few months later, a month later, 6 months later, whatever, however long it takes you to do it, you realize, I know so much more than I knew a month ago. What am I going to learn on the next project? It's just like this compound effect of, you just have to give someone the confidence in that very first project, and it's a great feeling. So I really want to, I think one of the ways that I can affect change is finding people, instilling confidence in them, and also giving them the tools, like teaching people how to edit or teaching people how to light, or I don't know. It really excites me thinking about that.
You told me you were passionate about activism and supporting diversity and marginalized voices in very real ways, rather than going on social media and posting about it. Mm-hmm. So what are you doing right now to make sure that you are taking a stand and you are making things happen?
I've been thinking about this a lot in light of the election and the Women's March, actually, because I'm a white woman. I'm a white feminist. And there's a lot of talk about what being a real ally actually means. You know, I have a certain point of view because I've grown up in privilege. And very often, white feminists have good intentions, but they maybe take up space in spaces that people of color have made for themselves, or they just don't get it. They don't. I mean,
in what ways?
I think, you know, you and I were talking about the Women's March and how it's like this really historic thing that happened. To me, it was life-changing, and I feel lucky that I was a part of it. But also, I think there were a lot of women after the fact that said, this was really a great thing, but here why it could have been better. I'm a Native American woman, or I'm a Black woman, and this is why we felt like we were sort of pushed out, or you didn't hear us, or all of these things that seem to be the case over and over again when there's just white feminism failing women of color, you know? And so for me, one way I'm really trying to approach feminism now is listening to women of color and hearing what they have to say, not taking up space in the communities that they have built for themselves, but hearing what they have to say, and also holding my white counterparts accountable. That's something I can do, because like most of us know now, most white women, most white educated women voted for Trump in the election. And one way that I feel ashamed, or that I could have done better, is really have a discussion with things like my family members, who I know I don't really align with politically, or you know, things like that. Like, what we can actually do is hold people accountable and really try to support marginalized voices, which either means uplifting their stories, like in film, hiring women of color, people of color, uplifting their stories, because only good things will come from that.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Sure.
I don't know. What do you think about that? I'm basically white-splaining that to you, though. Like, what do you think?
I have friends that are working really hard right now to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I very, very much appreciate that, because that's what we need right now. For people of color in general, it's been a very, very difficult time for us. And it's like you were saying earlier, they just don't, you know, maybe somebody had had a conversation with them. I don't know if that would have changed minds.
Mm-hmm.
But we would have at least done our part,
right,
to begin to educate, mm-hmm, or reach out to their humanity at least.
Yeah.
Push some buttons somehow. Because it wasn't until after the election that I got into a conversation with a couple of my friends. And, you know, they were like, how can I vote for either one of them? Like, I couldn't bring myself. And I'm like, I understand that. But if you didn't vote for one of them, then that was a vote for the other one, basically. That's what this race came down to. And what that means for my family and I, my dad immigrated here to the United States when he was 17. And he was able to work really, really hard, physical labor, mm-hmm, to get to where he is right now. And I have never seen my dad after this election. I had never seen him be so affected by the outcome of an election. Mm-hmm. And so talking about that experience with a lot of my friends, they're like, oh, like we didn't see it like that before. And
how could you not?
Yeah. And white feminism really is a thing, because I've always had a lot of friends that, you know, have been my allies and people who stood by my side. But they don't understand, because there's another level of bigotry that goes into it for me personally, being Hispanic and growing up in white suburbs.
There's a history of white people coming in and starting to claim space in that and take up space in certain art forms or communities. And once again, they're claiming things that were made by and for people of color. And there's like a long history of that happening. And I'm just trying to be more aware of it. And I also, one thing that was eye-opening for me too is that my privilege constantly is I see things in one point of view, and the only way that you can really understand another person's point of view is like listening to them and letting them speak their truth and really hearing them. And there were so many instances where, like, in light of the election, that I realized, oh, I didn't see it that way. Of course this is real. So like everyone was shocked. So many people were shocked that this happened, right? So many people were shocked that I can't believe like all of these freaking Nazis exist, right? Like, I can't believe we let white supremacy take control of an election, but so many people of color were saying, this has been our reality forever.
Yeah.
This is, we're not surprised.
That is exactly, you know? It. This is the conversation that I have had
right.
with a lot of my friends, and it's been very difficult because right. nobody saw it coming except for us. And, you know, maybe it's wrong to say that, like, only the people of color saw this coming. I personally right. can say that I did. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my friends will be able to back me up on that I did warn yeah. them. And it's not that they laughed it off. They just didn't see it. They didn't understand it. And my fear was very real. In yeah. fact, it was almost a year ago that I started. Until last summer, that's when I became very, very concerned.
Yeah.
And everybody thought it was a joke. And to me, it never was. Mm-hmm. And it was always very real for me. So to get to this point, you know, maybe something like this had to happen for everybody yeah. to just start listening and paying attention. Mm-hmm. And while marching for different causes is absolutely helping yeah. and changing minds, we've got to do better.
We have to do better.
Way better. Yeah. So I really appreciate you taking that stance, especially in this creative culture that we're fostering here in Houston. Right. Because Houston is just so diverse.
Houston's so diverse. And like sometimes I'm overwhelmed with how much needs to be done and how much is wrong with the world. But one thing that all of these super DIY women in Houston have taught me is that it starts in the community. I can affect change in deciding who I work with or helping someone who needs help that maybe like no one wants to help because they just don't have like the means, or it's just, we have to help each other out. And there are certain ways that I can actually make a difference in other people's lives. So like we were talking about hiring, supporting marginalized voices, getting stories out there that need to be told rather than from like a white cis point of view. And even from my point of view, I still have so much more representation on TV as a white woman. You know, I was thinking about this the other day that, you know, so many people don't understand why representation matters. And it's because that most white people and white men have never been forced to empathize with characters and people in TV and books and stories that aren't them. We're forced to empathize with point of views just because they're the protagonist, you know, over and over and over again. But when it's flipped, you suddenly realize like, oh, this is what it's like to be a woman. This is what it's like to be a black woman. This is what it's like to be a trans woman. Mm-hmm. If you're forcing other people to empathize with a protagonist in a movie that's not them, it's just, it can be really powerful and great. That's why representation is so important, because you'll be surprised. Like so many people think like, well, a story about, you know, a young black girl, it won't mean anything to me because I'm not a young black girl. But of course, some stories are like, you never, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I just think that representation is really important. And most white men don't realize, like, you are just lucky enough that everything on TV and in movies, it just happens to be who you are. Can you imagine, like, not seeing yourself ever in advertisements and things like that? It makes a difference.
So what do you do in order to educate yourself on these issues? Do you read? Are there certain books that you read? Do you watch certain shows?
I'm really trying to take a more active role in the content that I'm taking in. And luckily, the internet is like the best place. Mm-hmm. Everything exists.
Sure.
Good things and bad things exist on the internet. But I have become obsessed with an activist named Kat Black. She's incredible. So smart. Every single one of her videos that she does is like, I'm fist pumping the whole time because she's amazing. She happens to be a trans woman. Not all of her videos are about that, but it's just another point of view that she has that has taught me a lot about.
Sure, yeah.
These compound issues of oppression.
You just hit the nail on the head.
Right.
It's another point of view.
It's another point of view.
And it's great. Yeah.
And I just listening to voices like the Houston Black Lives Matter, Ashton P. Woods, I think is his name. Mm-hmm. I, again, have learned so much from him when I think there was a protest that they had a few months ago where it was specifically to support HIV activism in the Black community. And once again, I think white people, I don't know what happened, but maybe some like white activists probably unknowingly came in and started invading the space and like trying to take over it maybe. And he's really good about calling that out and saying why, what's the difference between supporting and then taking up space in an activism that isn't yours.
Yeah.
So listening and seeking out content from people is like the best education, like literally. And the thing is like, I can do better. I am totally at fault. I really want to seek out female and more diverse crew members. And so far I probably haven't done a good job of that. And those are definitely my goals with Femme Days, you know? So
what advice would you have for young women who are probably about to graduate from high school,
mm-hmm.
or they're currently in college and they don't even know where to start?
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give those young women who are trying to break into the industry and trying to do what you're doing, but maybe are a little bit less confident than you were?
If you can find women in the industry who are already doing it and just say, you know, can you be my mentor? Or just seeing them doing it is already really powerful. And then just don't believe people who already seem like they have it figured out or like they're doing it exactly the right way, because it's all facade. It's all fake. Everyone is internally freaking out, thinking like, this is all a lie. I hope I look like I'm really doing what I'm doing. Like, I have issues with the fake it or make it mentality, because to me it was really problematic in that I never believed that I could do it for a really long time. And I was surrounded by people who were just as new to the industry as I was, but they already had this like ego, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
And so just like believe that your voice is as important as everyone else's. And if you're going to do it a different way, that's just as valid as doing it another way. If you approach it like as in making art, it's all about the intention. There's all of this extra stuff floating around the film industry now that people will tell you validates your success. So like having the right equipment, meeting the right people and networking, which is important, but still doesn't mean you're going to make a great video if you know the right people. It's all about the intentions. If you find a person that you totally vibe with, that you think like every time we talk about art or every time we talk, it's just a great feeling. And I feel like we compliment each other. Even if they don't make videos or make art, freaking make something with them, because mm-hmm. I can assure you that something great is going to come out of it. I have a friend in a band named El Lago. He's, I think, the bassist. His name's Jake. And he always takes like really great pictures. And I know that he admires like photography and video from afar. And I told him like, why don't you help us on this music video that I just shot like a month ago, and I'm editing it right now. It's for my sister's band actually. And even though he had never done video production before, it was such a great experience, because it's all about the people that you surround yourself by, and it's all about the intention of making the art. As long as you don't care about making money, because at the end of the day, most people making films aren't making money. Right. I hate to break it to people, but they aren't. Only good things will come from that. And then you'll learn something from the project. You'll learn where you need to grow in your knowledge, and then you'll learn and surpass knowledge that you had already had. And only good things will come from that. And then it'll usually lead you, if the experience is great and you made something the way you wanted it to be made, it will usually lead to someone saying, I liked your video. Let's talk about doing something else. And that's how it starts. It's not about all the extra stuff. Oh, and I'll say one more thing. Mm-hmm. Although Jenny Waldo I consider her my mentor. She's a great director in Houston. One of the ways that I felt emboldened and more confident is finding women online who are doing stuff. Like, I started following, like I said, Ava DuVernay and Jill Soloway. They're directors that I really admire, and finding interviews where they talk about being a woman in the industry have really helped me. You'd be surprised at how like one interview of them talking about their experience on set validates your own feelings.
And it inspires too.
Exactly. And like I said, if you can't find those people in real life, just have these like these beacons of femininity that you can like look towards on the internet and say like, I can look towards them and know like it's possible. So
where do you see yourself a year from now?
I want to be making projects with Fem Days that bring to light more issues with activism, which I haven't done yet. I haven't done video activism yet. Mm-hmm. And to me, I have a skill set that not everyone has. And it's a way to bring information to people in a very specific way. And so I feel like I need to give to the community in that way. I want to be doing that. I want to be directing more. And I want to be supporting and producing other people's projects that might just need extra help. They might not have like... they might not have the way to execute something. And I really want to support people who need help, because a few people sort of intervened with me really early on. And that extra help could just be like the one thing that starts everything for someone, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's what I want to be doing.
Okay. So I have one last question for you.
Okay.
I ask all my guests this same question at the end of the interviews. What is currently inspiring you right this very moment? It could be a book, it could be an album, mm-hmm. it could be a person. What is inspiring you right now?
Okay, literally 5 minutes before I drove here, I got a book delivered that I wanted to bring and just like gush over with you. Okay. It's called Girl on Girl. It is a book of photography of female photographers shooting women. It's about the female gaze.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
I was like buzzing, yeah, looking through it. And I only looked through like the first 20 pages or whatever. Because the idea of the female gaze, I've thought about a lot. And, you know, with the male gaze, it's not like if you can just flip the script and it's the same. It's completely different. It's not like we can like look at men and thirst over them, but also have ownership over them, which is typically what the male gaze is. And so that book, I think literally right now, is what I'm like really excited to go home and read, and seeing women freaking make stuff,
yeah,
and support each other, mm-hmm, is like really inspiring. So currently, literally maybe an hour ago, that's what
that is. That was the question. What is inspiring
that's
you right
what's
this
inspiring
moment?
Me. It's, yeah, just so beautiful. Like, you, do you ever seeing women's bodies, mm-hmm, when they have been shot from a female's perspective? It's so different.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so different. And you can tell, like, almost every single image in that book that I saw is a naked woman, and it's just different.
Yeah, it's so regal and, mm-hmm, beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you see it in magazine spreads too, even. You, mm-hmm, can tell a female photographer from a male photographer,
right,
for sure.
Right.
Absolutely.
I love that. And to me, it shows once again, why having different point of views behind the camera literally can change the way art is perceived. Because with the camera is a point of view. It can be the point of view of the subject. It can be the audience's point of view. It can be an outsider's point of view. The camera is a point of view. So it's like you have to be really careful about the way that you shoot your subjects. And anyway, that's what's inspiring me.
Thank you so much for joining me today on the gallery, Kristen. I'm so happy to have you. I'm so happy to be friends with you.
I know.
And
you're awesome.
You're awesome. You're awesome. And you're really going out there. You have this platform and this voice that a lot of people don't have. Mm-hmm. You're a filmmaker. It's so visual. The things that you make are gorgeous.
Thanks.
I am such a huge fan of your cinematography. So how can people find you? How can they reach out to you if they want to get in touch with you?
I would say right now my Instagram is the best way. You know, it has all of my information. It's my Fem Days Instagram. Mm-hmm. I am currently making my own website. I think I'm finally have my goals set, you know, and I'm.
And that's at Fem Days.
Fem Days, yeah.
FemDaze.
Yeah, I pretty much use it only to post about film
projects.
Stuff and
thank you everybody for listening in to this episode of The Gallery. As always, you can reach out to me on Instagram at The Gallery Podcast or via email thegallerypodcast@gmail.com, or you can like us on Facebook, The Gallery Podcast. Thanks everybody.
Thank
Bye.
You. Bye.